Well, good morning. Appreciate each one here that's here today. Thankful for health and strength. Glad that we can come together on a day like today and anticipate the Lord meeting with us, whether there be few or be many. The thought that I have for today is not a deep theological thing. It's not. It's just has to do with everyday living, and I'd like for us to kind of start maybe with thinking about some things that's happened in the last week or so. Just noticed in the text group that we have that we share different things from one to another amongst the congregation here. Something was said about the snow earlier in the week and how marvelous it was and how beautiful it was and to look out and see it. And you know, when some individuals see snow, that's all they see is beauty. When I see snow, I see extra effort and difficulty and uncomfortableness. If I could stay inside, but everything I go to do, if snow comes, it's not that I can't see some beauty in it, but everything I do, snow makes it more difficult. Makes it more difficult for me to get to work. And then everything involved in my work, and I'm guessing Brother Paul's work is the same way, because many times, if you get snow, there's something about the temperature change and the accumulation of moisture on there, and he's working with wires. I'm sure that snow many times causes problems that wouldn't have happened if it had other kinds of weather. And there's nothing like getting underneath something in between frozen stuff and thawed stuff, especially when it's been going down the road and it has road grime and all of that in it, and you're under there trying to, I always have to work on the bottom side of the car when it's been snowing. It just seems like that's the way it is, you know. You got to get under there, and it may have been frozen solid when it came in, but the shop is warm, so it starts falling on you in that cold, dirty water. Anyway, I don't want to go that far, but there's something about snow when it comes. It has the ability to cover and disguise most anything. Have you noticed that? You can totally lose something in the snow. You lose your keys between your vehicle and the house, and it snows. There's a good chance you won't find it until it thaws out. If you're maybe you live in an area where there's been some litter in the side ditch and there's some debris alongside the road, but you get a nice covering of snow, and that ditch looks just as pretty as the one in the manicured yard. And not only does it disguise things and cover things that way, but it makes everything look the same. Have you ever noticed? I mean, you look out and it reflects, especially if it's snowed and then the sun comes out, it is so bright. And everything looks, All around us, it just looks completely, everything's painted white. You know, and there is something about snow, as long as it hasn't had sand or smoke or something blowing, it's so white. That's why we sing about salvation making us whiter than the snow. I mean, that's really not maybe technically possible, but the white of snow is just, it reflects, the reason it's white is because it's reflecting all of the spectrum of light. That's what makes it white. So I want us to apply what we know about snow and how it covers and how it makes things all look the same. I would like to apply it to some everyday things in our lives. So I'd like to turn to 1 Peter, the 4th chapter. In 1 Peter chapter 4, Peter is known for being a very down-to-earth person. In fact, Peter, most all of us would say Peter is not complicated. In fact, Peter errs on the side of speaking his mind. And whatever comes into his mind is most likely what Peter is going to say. So let's look at I want to read the first 11 verses in 1 Peter chapter 4. And I want us just to kind of get the picture. And remember, Peter is not trying to be some deep philosophical person. Peter is just expressing his thoughts. He's not trying to reason with us. He's just trying to, you might say, paint a picture and help us to understand the reality of our position and our circumstance. So he says here, "Forasmuch then, as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind, for he that has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sins." This is a common sense approach and a logical conclusion that all of us can come to, is that just as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, we must be prepared to have some uncomfortable times too, because we are of the same persuasion now, all right? Just a very common sense approach here. He says that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lust of the men, but to the will of God. Now, this "he" is referring to the one in the verse before us, for it says here, "Arm yourselves likewise with the same mind, for he that suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin." He that suffereth in the flesh has ceased from sin is the same one as he that no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lust of men, but to the will of God. And when you come to that place that you're willing to lay aside the past, the error of the past, and you, especially if it's been a change, a big change, if you've been in the workforce and you've been involved in all of the things that other people that you work with do in their spare time, in their free time, and the revelry they involved in, and the activities they become engaged in, if you've been involved in that and you make an abrupt change, there is going to be somebody that's going to say, "What's wrong with you?" They're going to address that. They're going to say, "You didn't used to be like this. You used to go with us. You used to be partaker of the same things we were partaking of, and now you don't want to do that. What's wrong with you?" And you're going to have, in the first verse, he talked about arming ourselves to suffer. You're going to have some repercussions for making a good decision. All right? a good decision about your soul and about your life. And he says, he, in verse 2, that person, that individual, you and I, that no longer are going to live after that time, that sinful lifestyle, but we're going to live after the will of God. So who's he talking to here in these first two verses? He's talking about those that are professing, he's talking to those that are professing to have salvation. That's, I think that's pretty apparent. And he says here in verse 3, for the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lasciviousness, lust, excess of wines, reveling, banquets, and abominable idolaters. That in the past, that's the things we used to do, but we're not doing that now. He says, wherein they think it strange, our old friends, our co-workers are going to think something's wrong with you when you have told them, I don't do that anymore. I'm not going to come by after work and drink with you. I'm not going to go to that place. I'm not going to the bar. I'm not going to the casino. I'm not going, we're not gambling on whatever, fighting chickens or racing horses. We're just not going to do any of that anymore. And they're going to think it's strange. He says, wherein they think it's strange that you run not with them to the excess of the same excess of right, speaking evil of you. They're going to make try to make you feel that you're a weakling, that you've succumbed to something that is inferior. You're not being a man. You're not being an adult. You're not enjoying life. There's going to be accusations aimed at you. Peter, I believe, experienced a lot of that. He'd been a fisherman. And I don't know that fishermen's reputation has changed much. Sailors' reputations, it's been pretty consistent all through time. Kind of a rough individual. And Peter still had occasion to rub shoulders with those that he used to fish with and those that he used to be out on the lake with. And they probably said some things to Peter that wasn't very very nice. Probably some harsh things. Verse 5. Who shall give account to him that is ready to judge the quick and the dead? Who's going to give account? Those that are bringing accusations, that is looking down on you, that has been different. They're going to give an account. To him that's ready to judge the quick and the dead. For this cause was the gospel preached also to them that are dead, that they might be judged according to men in the flesh, but live according to the Spirit of God. There's a lot of hope in these two verses, and some feel like, some commentators feel like term here that's talking about the quick and the dead is talking about the Jews and the Gentiles. But ultimately, it's speaking about the quick being those that are alive in the Spirit with the Lord, and the dead being those that are dead in trespasses and sins. And we know that until Christ came, the probability and the possibility for a Gentile person to be a part of the Judaism religion was really slim. It wasn't totally impossible, but it was just really, really slim. They were overlooked. They were looked down upon by the Jews. And they didn't have the heritage or the advantage of being taught the old law. They were idolaters by and large. And he said here that those that bring those accusations against you, they're going to have to deal with the one that can call all of them into judgment. The quick and the dead. The one that, that's who we're going to have. We're just, Peter is just kind of explaining life and how things are going to fall out. You talk to somebody that has a lot of experience in a particular field, and they're going to tell you, well, you can do that, but here's some of the repercussions that's going to happen. You keep going down this path, and this is how it's going to unfold for you. And Peter is trying to just open that up to us here. He says, verse 7, but the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. If Peter could say that, surely we can say that today. The end. The time when we face the judgment. It has to be at hand very soon. It's not something that's way off in the distant future in an age yet to come. I believe we live in the end times. Okay? So he said, verse 8, and above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins. So he's talked about our association with those that's going to find fault with us making a decision to follow the Lord. Those that known us or have known us when we were part of the classified as being dead in the sin, in sins. And he talked about the judgment that was coming. And now he says, and above all these things, above all the things that you have to be prepared for and know how to cope with, because somebody is going to find fault with your integrity with the Lord. If it's not your coworker, it's going to be an old school friend, it's going to be somebody somewhere, they're going to find something to pick at. He says, and above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins. I don't believe he's talking about so much the sin against God's law. I would like to read a definition of sin here. And this is something a contemporary, is not from an old dictionary. It says, sin is a noun that means an offense against moral or religious law, or an action that is considered wrong. An action that is considered wrong. Are there things that people do that in your mind is wrong? I'm going to be like Peter this morning. I'm going to tell you there's a lot of people that does a lot of stuff that I think is wrong. I work with them. Sometimes we live with them. Sometimes we're related to them. Sometimes they're our parents. Sometimes they're our children. Sometimes they're our siblings. And sometimes they're the people we go to church with. And sometimes you might think about saying, hopefully we don't say too much of this, but sometimes it comes to our mind about saying, why did you do that? Why would you spend your money on whatever. Why do you eat that? Why do you wear that? And in our mind, it's wrong. I wouldn't do that. Not now. I wouldn't eat it in a box. I wouldn't eat it with a fox. I wouldn't eat any of that. You children know what I'm talking about. It's just, that's wrong. You don't do that. Don't cut the board off, you know, that way. Don't use the tool that way. Don't treat your animal that way. There's so many things that we could say, that's just wrong. You know, we need a lot of love to... He said in this verse, and above all things, above all of the serious consequence and the things that we have to deal with because we have chosen to live for the Lord. Above all of that, because you're going to deal with it. There's going to be people find fault with you because you go to church every time you get a chance. I've been accused of having a hobby of going to church. And they don't realize that it is the fundamental thing that I feel is important in life. And they call it a hobby. But you're going to face all of that kind of stuff. But above all of that, there's going to be those that you have a real close connection with that you need extra grace for. Because they do things in your mind that's wrong. We want our marriages to be strong. We want our families to be strong. We want our congregation nucleus to be strong. We want to have a good relationship with our coworkers. Maybe you're an employer and you want to be able to have help. You know, it's pretty hard to keep help if you harshly criticize everything they do. It's hard. People won't stay around and show up every day consistently if everything they do gets harshly criticized. Especially if you tell them, why can't you do something right? People won't come to work. They'll find a different place to go. I know that there's things that I do that other people look on and say, he shouldn't do that. He shouldn't say that. He shouldn't act that way. Not a moral issue, okay? Understand what I'm saying here. But we need, it says here, above all things, have fervent charity or love among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins. Now I want us to talk about, bring the snow back in here. We said that snow could cover up a lot of things and disguise it, right? You got trash in the yard, get about 6 inches of snow, it'll look better. You know, there's stuff that if there's toys out there the children should have picked up, maybe there's something that you didn't take all the way to the garbage container. Maybe there's an old tire laying out in your yard somewhere. Maybe it's a limb that fell off of your tree and you just haven't picked it up yet. You know, you can get 4, 5, 6 inches of snow and you look out in your yard and it looks kind of pretty. And that limb might add some extra character out there when it's covered with snow. And my yard looks just as good with snow on it as the neighbors that look perfect without snow. Right? I'm not saying we all have a junky yard, okay? It's just that the potential for snow to make my yard look beautiful is very good. You know, if we will allow charity and genuine love, you know how people stay together for 50 plus years? Y'all can talk to us later if you want to about this. I promise you, your commitment to love one another has covered some things that each one of you could say, that's just wrong. He, she shouldn't do that. Why do they do that? They know it bothers me. But you know, if you constantly say those things, why do you always do this? You know what happens? Instead of that getting covered, it just keeps coming to the surface. And it's just poking out everywhere we look. I live in a rocky place. I've made many references to that. And there is something about living in a rocky terrain and time that causes rocks to surface. I don't think they're getting bigger, and I don't think they're multiplying. But I will tell you that when you have a place that you go over back and forth, whether it's with your feet or your automobile or whether it's livestock or whatever, rocks will come out of the ground. And here's how it happens. When you step on the dirt gets pushed down and it goes underneath the rock. And you just keep walking there, and sooner or later, that rock starts coming out. I worked with a man that said that his father would send them out as a boy with a sledgehammer in the yard to hit the rocks and knock them back down a little bit or break them up where they could carry them off. I'm talking about some big rock, you know, football-sized rocks or something, and they start surfacing, and they'd go out and smack those rocks with a sledgehammer and try to break them off or bust them down, you know. You know what happens if we constantly just walk back and forth and draw attention to something that is wrong in my mind? I'm going to tell you something I think is wrong. Please don't be offended if you do this. But if you cook carrots for me and you put sugar in them, that's just wrong. I'm telling you, it's not supposed to have it in there. But I don't think most people in this vicinity does that. If it is, you don't put very much in there because... But some of them taste like sweet potatoes. We have to be, if I constantly draw attention to that. Now, there is something that I will say, ask. It's hard for me to order mashed potatoes at a restaurant because I don't like mashed potatoes that come in a box. So I'll ask them. If mashed potatoes comes with the meal that I order, I said, are they real or hypocrite? I just ask them because I want to know. Because I don't want to pay good money for something that come out of a box. But if we have something that we feel is wrong, and we just keep pushing on that and pushing on that, what happens to our relationship? It deteriorates, doesn't it? But this verse says, this is just every day where we live, this verse says, above all things, above all of the things you're dealing with, outside influences and people that you come in contact with first impression, above all of that, have fervent charity among yourselves, in your homes, with your spouse, with your children, with your in-laws, with your... the people that you need to be able to work together. I need my wife. I need my family. I need the ones in the congregation. I need the people that I work with. And the last thing that I ought to do is constantly be put... There's times for instruction. There's times for being able to communicate about what you like and you don't like. But he says, above all things, have charity among yourselves. He says, use hospitality one to another without grudging. Yeah, I promised I'd be faithful to him. And here we are, 50 years later, just barely getting along. No, the Lord's got something better than that. Let it snow, if you will, in your relationship. Get enough love to look beyond the things that make you want to grind your teeth. To the point you don't grind your teeth anymore. We're talking about being able to look on those that we need to get along with, the ones we should get along with, being able to look on them where they look just like the yard that was perfect without the snow. Remember? If it snows in my yard and I left my shovel laying out there, get 6 inches of snow, you don't know if I got a shovel in the yard or not, as long as it's not sticking up with a handle. You don't know if I've got a, if it gets 8 or 10 inches of snow in the yard, you don't know if I've got an old car tire laying out there or not. It looks just as good as the one that was raked and mowed and manicured because it's covered. Lord, help us to let us have and cultivate the level of charity that we can look over the things. Some of us men, have a reputation of not picking up after ourselves in the house. I don't know, leaving your socks somewheres or your dirty clothes or something. That's just kind of like sailors being rough. I mean, men have had a reputation of that. Our wives sometimes need to have a lot of love to cover that up if you leave stuff. And it could be the other way. Maybe your wife don't put their shoes up and you think that's wrong. But don't kick the shoes out in the middle of the floor. Lord, help us to have enough love to cover it. Let it snow a little bit in our yard. Let it snow in our relationship. Have enough charity that we can overlook all of that and ask the Lord to help us be able to be charitable one with another. He said in verse 10, as every man hath received the gift of salvation, I believe is what he's talking about, the thing that made us be so different that our coworkers say, what's the matter with you? It might cause us to suffer a little bit because we're changed. He says, as every man hath received the gift, even so minister the same one to another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. If any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. If any man minister, let him do it as of the ability which God giveth, that God in all things may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom be praised and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Most all of us were raised to be to a stage we would consider adult before we entered into marriage. I know there's been some cultures that children are given in marriage, which I think is wrong, okay? But we, in our culture, we would consider all of ourselves adults when we got married. And so when you get to be an adult, there's something about the adjustments that have to happen when you come together. That we need, for the sake of our discussion this morning, we need some snow in our life. We need to have that love, that charity, that covers a multitude of sins. Anita and I came from two totally different homes. She was an adult. I was an adult when we came together in marriage. Although we went to the same church, we went to the same camp meetings, we went to young people's meeting together, and we thought we knew each other before we got married. We found out there's stuff we didn't know after we got married. And it's taken snow, if you will, to help us down through the years. And all of us, it doesn't matter what relationship we're talking about, we're going to need some snow in it. We're going to need some covering that'll cover up the things that we feel is a discrepancy in other people's character. There's times to set expectations. If one person comes from a procrastinator's background and another one comes from a fastidious background, and you start coming together, there may have to be expectations set. I expect for us to be on time. That means we have to start get ready at this time. What can I do to help? But Lord, help us not to dwell on each other's sins. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Not the moral violations, but the things that is just wrong in your mind. I've told you a couple of things that I think is just wrong. But Lord, help us to that. We all got a big list. If somebody does something that it might fit your list. There may be something that I do, the way I speak, the way I carry myself or whatever. And you may have to have a lot of extra grace just because it's something on your list that's wrong. A man shouldn't act that way. A man shouldn't say that. They ought to know better. What all of those things. Lord, help us to have love one for another. Now, Paul was different than Peter. I won't spend a lot more time on this thought, but I'd like to get Paul's perspective. Peter, the fisherman, and Paul, the scholar. Let's go to Galatians. The fourth chapter of Galatians, and I want to read a couple verses here. Paul was writing to a specific congregation, I believe, or a specific vicinity. And he says in Galatians, the fourth chapter and the 14th verse, and he says, I'm sorry, it's the fifth chapter of Galatians, verse 14. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this: thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And the advice that Brother Clifford Wilson gave to Anita and I on our wedding day was that we're going to be the closest neighbor to each other that we could ever possibly have, and that we ought to love our neighbor as ourselves. That was one of his thoughts at our wedding. And verse 15 says, but if you bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. Paul, much more intellectual, would have to say than Peter. But he says almost the same thing that Peter said, that love would cover a multitude of perceived transgressions. And Paul said here, if you bite and devour, how do you bite? In a relationship, sometimes little children, I don't know, it probably starts out as a defense mechanism, but sometimes children will do that. And then you have to get them to not do that, because they will randomly do that, maybe out of self-preservation or whatever. But how do you bite in a relationship? I hope nobody has actually sunk their teeth in their companion, but you know, this is what came to my mind. Paul here is giving advice. He says, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, but instead of loving your neighbor as yourself, if you bite and devour, there's going to be some heavy consequences for that. If we deal with those differences, those perceived wrongs, those sins, if you will, I'm not talking about moral sins or sins that would cause us to fall out in our relationship with the Lord. I'm talking about the things that in your mind is just plain wrong. Don't wash your blue jeans with whatever. Don't run 10,000 miles on an oil change. I don't know what all it is that you might say, that's just wrong, don't do that. You know how to bite? Approach those things in a confrontational manner. Be contentious about it. Draw not only their attention, but others' attention to that. My wife, I can't get her to fix me carrots without putting brown sugar in them. Say that at all-day meeting. See how that goes for you. That's biting. It's real plain, but that's biting. When you draw attention to your spouse or your family's perceived shortcomings, some people might say, airing dirty laundry. Well, I think it's a little different. It's stomping around that rock. You know, you go out with your sledgehammer and you beat on the dirt right around that rock that's starting to come up, it's going to come up some more. You start walking around and around this thing that annoys you about your child, there's time for discipline and there's time for instruction. I don't want to get off on parenting this morning, but parenting is setting an expectation and holding children accountable. It's not reasoning. Okay? When we reason, many times with a child, many times when we're reasoning with a child, we're circling the violation and we're impressing on them the error of that. We don't have to do a lot of explaining. We just tell them it's wrong and it's not acceptable. This is the expectation. You got adult children? You got elderly parents? And we circle and circle. You always say, you always do. You know those phrases. Lord, help us to be careful. It'd be better, a lot better, to let some snow fall in your yard. Let some love cover it. Lord, help me Lord, help me to see my fellow man, especially those in my family, and those that it's so important for me to have a good relationship. Lord, help me to see the ones that's got rubbish in their yard, like the ones that don't have any rubbish. You know, from time to time you'll see pictures of this perfectly organized workshop or perfectly organized kitchen or whatever it is, and you think, Lord, mine only is that way just before the family gets here or whatever it is. And somebody else is portraying that they live like that. Lord, help us to see them both the same. Let us have enough love for one another that those things, I love them beyond their shoes in the middle of the floor. I love them beyond the bad grammar. I love them beyond I can't get them to understand that maintenance is better than repairs. You know, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. All of those things. Lord, help me to have enough love and let enough let snow fall in my yard, in my life, that it'll make... What did Peter say? He said, above all the other things that we deal with in life, let have fervent charity among yourselves. So that's my challenge for us today. Above all, have fervent charity among yourselves. You pray for me.